Welcome to MGRO Radio 7.4.
You got it.
Is that right?
Yes. Oh, my God. Did you guess?
Right. Yeah, I guessed.
Well done. Well done.
Just how we do around here.
Yeah.
So we're about to talk Wisconsin and the aftermath of the Rutgers game, which I hope Seth will live through. got a little seamed this week. I'm Brian Cook.
I'm Seth Fisher.
I'm Alex Strain.
Alex, you need a poster or something. It looks like you've been institutionalized.
I'm waiting for a bookshelf, and
okay.
Until that comes in, I haven't put up the other decor because I'm not sure where the bookshelf is going. So
this is just like an emphatically college thing that you're like on a podcast with a video component, and you're sitting in front of a blank white wall.
Get you a Train Spotting.
We're gonna work on that, Alex. gotta get some decor,
or we'll put up the sponsors behind him.
Yeah,
sure.
Yep. So if we were going to do that, the sponsors we would put behind it would be Underground Printing. UGP has 3 locations in Ann Arbor. Offer thousands of University of Michigan products. Check out UGP Apparel, UGPMichiganApparel.com, or MGOBlogStore.com. We'll have a new shirt up tomorrow. We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, HomeSure Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, The Human Element, Phil Klein Insurance Group, Prentice 4M, Signal Wire, which we are using right now. If you're a person who skips the ads, again, you want to hear the ones that they're putting together. They're hilarious.
We'd like to point out the internet issues here are not signal wires, but Seth's particular internet hell. So.
Yeah, it just started today at 4:55. So I apologize if our sound doesn't sound great, but AT&T, I'm supposed to have blasts. I'm supposed to be going like crazy. Anyway.
There you go. So we're having some issues here with the audio. Are you still there? Okay.
I am. My video's now off. You get to see a picture of me instead.
Well, anyway, so Michigan plays Wisconsin this week, and Wisconsin is favored by about 2, depending on exactly which sports book you were looking at, which is a little bit of a surprise because Wisconsin's 1-2 hasn't looked very good this season. Michigan has, and then everybody got very spooked by the second half at Rutgers. But we're here to talk about Wisconsin first, starting with their offense, not up to expectations. So Graham Mertz comes in as the most highly touted Wisconsin quarterback out of high school and pretty much ever, and gets the starting job. Jack Cohn transfers to Notre Dame, and then Graham Mertz throws 6 picks in 2 games against FBS foes. That's bad.
Yeah. And the thing about Mertz was, you know, he has the first game against Illinois last year where he goes like 21 of 24. And then after that, they just kind of game manage him the rest of the season. And so entering this year, it was kind of like, well, did they already Wisconsinize him? And the answer right now is no, he is significantly worse than the Wisconsin baseline. And he is significantly worse than the game manager baseline. Because the one thing the game manager is supposed to do is take care of the football, and he has not done that at all. And, you know, something I put in the FFFF was, you know, you remember Alex Hornibrook, that he would have those throws every so often, just that dagger, that like 30-yard pass that would come out of nowhere that would keep Wisconsin's offense moving. And we have not seen that at all from Graham Mertz this season. And I don't know if it's in there at the moment. And it's not just the 6 picks. He's also fumbled and lost fumbles, at least 2 or 3 this season, if I remember correctly. He fumbled it several times against Penn State. There's just a lot of issues right now with Mertz. He doesn't read the defenses. He doesn't see the underneath safety. He doesn't see the linebacker. He forces balls in there, and his passes just frankly aren't very accurate right now. So it's a host of issues that are hurting Wisconsin right now on the offensive side. I mean, the passing game is totally being taken away.
Yeah.
Mrs. Lincoln, how is the quarterback?
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, the internet issues are really are freezing him up now. I kind of wonder if this is like, you know, the internet god or the football gods trying to punish Wisconsin because they, you know, they dipped their toes too far into quarterback land. Like, Wisconsin was Wisconsin, and everyone was okay with Wisconsin being Wisconsin. But if you, like, add a you know, an attempt to be a quarterback, and like, you know, you go and get Clemson's running back instead of like using your own New Jersey running back. Like, this is the punishment you get.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that's, I think, really hurting Wisconsin is that their running backs right now are not like vintage Wisconsin running backs. They're just kind of there.
Yeah, and I don't know what happened to Jalen Berger. He was their guy last season. You know, wasn't a star yet, but he was a guy that seemingly was going to be in line for a big role, and then they brought in Ches Malusi, the Clemson transfer. He's kind of taken over, and then they've got Isaac Garendo, who didn't really, you know, play a huge role last season, and he's now the number two. And Berger basically is not even getting on the field in their games against Power Five teams. So, you know, Malusi looks okay, and Garendo looks okay, but I don't see a Jonathan Taylor here.
Yeah, and Berger is going to be the guy.
Alex, another thing that you kind of discovered when you looked over the tape is that they're having some pass protection issues at tackle.
Yeah. Yeah. Tyler Beach, the left tackle, has got the really crazy PFF grade situation where he's got just an atrocity grade in pass blocking, and then a pretty good grade in run blocking, and that's kind of their issue right now. They can maul on that left side with him and left guard Selznor, but the pass pro issues are there, and I clipped one of them where an end comes around almost untouched, which is kind of the issue, that when Beach cracks, he generally doesn't even get a hand on the guy, and the end comes around and pops Mertz right in the back and forces a fumble, and those are the kind of hits that I do wonder what effect it's having on Mertz psychologically at the moment, because he's struggling to find his footing, and it doesn't help when that's happening every so often.
Yeah, so 10 points against Penn State, 13 points against Notre Dame, and I think more disturbingly from that, I think they averaged 3.1 yards a carry against Penn State, something like 2.7 against Notre Dame. I'm still concerned because, you know, this is still a Wisconsin offensive line. They still, the last few times Michigan has gone up against them, it's been a rout. And we saw Michigan survive for the most part in the first few weeks of the season, but then against Rutgers, tackles were an issue for big chunks of that game. So what is the prognostication for how Michigan's going to do relative to the opponents that Wisconsin has gone up against so far, particularly in the middle of the line?
Yeah, that's what I don't really know. I mean, I will say Penn State has P.J. Mustafa, who's a really good defensive tackle, and I don't think Michigan has that caliber of player right now. It's definitely, you know, this is a measuring stick, right? It's a measuring stick for Wisconsin, where their offensive line is at. Can they finally get back in the groove and push a team around? And can Michigan, you know, show after two really rough years in a row against Wisconsin? I mean, what I will say is that Penn State had a lot of success stopping the run, in part because they didn't respect Graham Mertz's ability to throw the ball. And that is going to be a question, because Michigan, if they can stack the box, bring the safeties down, they can get away with getting pushed around a little bit up front if they're able to just key in and hammer away and put enough bodies in whatever gaps do open up.
Yeah, and so that is a little bit alarming, because Michigan had an opportunity to not respect a particular passing game they recently went up against, and they gave that passing game far too much respect. So I'm not saying that's going to happen again, because coaches look at what happened in the most recent game and tend to learn from their mistakes, but it is a little bit, you know, gives you some pause.
I will say, though, that Mertz's tape is significantly worse than Noah Vedral's tape. I mean, Vedral was limited and was only allowed to do a few things, but Mertz is, I mean, Seth sent me this, that Mertz, I think, is 206th out of 207 quarterbacks ranked by PFF. I haven't watched 207 quarterbacks, so I can't tell you where he ranks among those, but it's rough because he's running some of the same stuff that Vedral runs, but the balls aren't even close on some cases on these 4-yard slants and little screens, and yeah, it's rough. and they're going to need him to play better the rest of the season just to get back to game manager caliber.
Right.
And then so the receiving core is shockingly familiar. It's like still Kendrick Pryor and Danny Davis, who played against Michigan in 2017. And they're 6 foot. They're all right, but they don't really make a whole lot of stuff happen. And the guy you got to watch out for is the tight end, as per usual.
Who's also been there forever. Ferguson.
Yeah, they've all been there forever.
Yeah.
But they're all just kind of like, eh.
Yeah, this is Barry Alvarez' grandson, remember?
I did not remember that. I probably should remember because he's been around forever, but I don't. This is what happens. So you go into this and you think that Michigan would probably be able to do something similar to what Notre Dame and Penn State did. Like, Notre Dame's defense doesn't look great. Penn State's might be pretty good, but if they're willing to be aggressive and Mertz doesn't improve significantly, it doesn't really seem like this is going to be the kind of team that's going to hit you over the top if you get too aggressive. It's not the kind of team that's going to grind out super long drives. At least they haven't so far. But, you know, that line kind of gives you pause, and what Rutgers was able to do in the second half yesterday, last week, gives you pause.
I will say that Wisconsin is able to still grind pretty long drives. They didn't do much offensively against Penn State, but they held the ball for 43 minutes of the 60 minutes in the game. So if they have a couple of drives where they're running the ball really well, they're still capable of milking the clock. And it's going to be a question of which offense is able to stay out there longer, because they're not going to be throwing it much. So if they find a groove, that's going to take 8 minutes off the clock, just like that, on a drive that for a different team might only be 5 minutes if you were playing with any kind of tempo.
Yeah, my concern is that Wisconsin, if they had played our schedule, would look exactly like Michigan. Like, just runs the ball all the time, has, for some reason, not using their quarterback at all. And, you know, they've already had to play Notre Dame. They've already had to play, you know, Penn State, who looks pretty good. Both those teams do have downfield passing games. And, I mean, you guys made fun of me on WTKA when I was like, you got to throw the ball to Cornelius Johnson. And everyone was like, no, they're not going to do that. And I'm like, well, Alex, you came up with the same conclusion. Like, that's how you have to beat Wisconsin. They're going to stop everything else with that front seven.
Yeah, and so Penn State got the three big pass plays, and that was it. And that is sort of encouraging because Michigan has displayed a similar big play ability. and then, you know, I feel like they're going to go in the watch the tape from last week and be like, all right, we need to attack the perimeter more. We need to actually do some speed and space, because this is what they do. They, like, oscillate between not doing any of that and then doing a lot of it. And every time they do it, they're like, oh, now it's going to happen. This is the new normal. And then it's never is. But this might be a new normal for this week.
I mean, they've done this against Rutgers every single year under Harbaugh. 2015, they did it. 2016, it just happened to, like, work really well. 2017, they went in a hole. 2018, they went in a hole, and we all got upset about it. 2019, it was like, you know, even last year, you know, they weren't running their offense until Cade McNamara entered the game. So maybe it's just a Rutgers thing.
Maybe. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about the Wisconsin defense.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGO Blog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGO Blog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGOblog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears while we all drank sorrow.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 7.4. We are now going to discuss the Wisconsin defense, which is much more intimidating than the Wisconsin offense. held Notre Dame to 3 rushing yards. That is affected by a lot of sacks, of course, but they did a number on Penn State as well. And I think one of the most telling parts is that in both of those games, Penn State and Notre Dame really didn't even bother trying to run the ball very much. So I think Penn State had like a total of 12 carries for their running backs and Notre Dame had 20, but 5 of those came after the game was well in hand. So both of these teams looked at the Wisconsin defense and they're like, we're going to throw it twice as much as we run. And Michigan comes in with fewer pass attempts than anyone not named Air Force, Navy, or Army. So this is going to be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, it was interesting for Penn State because that game really has 2 halves to it. You have the first half in which Penn State is just getting bottled up the whole time, not really doing anything on offense, a lot of 3-and-outs. And then the second half, where they were reasonably effective against Wisconsin's defense. They scored 16 points in the second half, should have been 17, missed an extra point in there. And I believe they also missed a field goal there, too. So, and the big story was they started throwing the ball down the field. And once they did that, they were able to open up more in the screen game, able to rip off a chunk of runs. And it was the same story every time they threw down the field. Scott Nelson, the free safety.
Hey, you cut out there a little bit, Alex. We're going to infer from the post that you wrote, you're saying like they were able to rip off a few chunk runs, and it was kind of the same story every time they threw down the field. Scott Nelson, the free safety, kept biting on like a mid-level route, and then there would be a guy open by like 10 yards.
And Notre Dame also hit a 40-yard fade on one of the cornerbacks where they got out of position. So it seems like a situation where Michigan's going to have to take some shots. And, you know, kind of the issue there is that Wisconsin already has 10 sacks, and all of their linebackers can get after the quarterback, and, you know, one of their brief scoring drives that Wisconsin had came when Cone got absolutely blindsided by one of the Wisconsin linebackers and fumbled. And Michigan's been very good picking up guys to date on the very few dropbacks they've had, but I think it's fair to call that an unproven section of the team so far.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably going to have to do it off of play action because Wisconsin, once they are bringing the other linebackers around to get after you, they can get after you. And both of us were like, whoa, Jack Sanborn has kind of taken another step forward as a blitzer and was already pretty dangerous. And Nurk, you know, with the quarterback, they went and got their four-star, like, you know, the top 250 guy, and it hasn't worked out. But they finally did it with an outside linebacker, too, with Nate Herbig, and that has worked out. He's a second-year player who really looks like a five-star out there. So their pass rush, when they can pin their ears back, is great. But a lot of times, they're kind of going after the run first. So I think, you know, if you can get some play-action passing in there, and, you know, if it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen, but you can get a couple guys downfield, and you don't need that many scores, right? So it might just be worth it to try to to long ball it a few times and get what you can and get a lead on them or something. Because I think once you get Graham Mertz pressing, the flip side is going to be a lot better. If Michigan's just kind of out there man-balling against these guys, I don't know. I don't know if anyone can do that to them.
Yeah, it looks like a situation in which Michigan is just going to have to like hit a couple of things here and there and hope that it stands up. And you know, we're doing the WK roundtable, and Sam is talking an awful lot about JJ McCarthy. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if that's not entirely random, and that there's a chance that if the offense isn't really doing anything in this game, that the coaches are going to be ready to put him in and see what he brings. Because one thing that he does bring is that we've seen him carry the ball in his own read, and he looks like he's actually a plus athlete in a way that Cade McNamara is not. Mm-hmm. So that could be a way to crack this front defense.
Yeah, my one hope really is that the defensive ends are not the greatest defensive ends they've ever had. So, you know, Hayes has done a pretty good job this year. All has done a pretty good job this year. Schoonmaker's done a really good job this year. Stuber's done a really good job this year of moving people out. And their ends are Henningsen and Isaiah Mullins. So those two guys are not Garrett Rand and Isaiah Loudermilk. And the last time we saw these guys was 2018, and it was these same two dudes. Mullins was like a true freshman trying to play out there. Henningsen was a walk-on freshman. Obviously, they're older now, but they are still not ideal for what Wisconsin wants to do on the defensive line. And if we could possibly move those guys out and get a kick on Burks and Herbig, you know, Michigan is pretty good about playing the edges depending on what they get, right? So if they can keep doing that, if they can get some good kicks, I think they can move some guys there, and then, you know, it's Corum versus these linebackers, which is still not a great matchup, but you could win one or two of those battles.
Yeah, but this game just looks like a complete slugfest, which is, and if that is going to happen and there's a lot of punting and there's a lot of punt returns, I think Michigan has an advantage there. So we don't often delve into special teams on the podcast, but I think that it might be decisive here because Wisconsin currently ranks, I think, 111th in FEI's current special teams rankings, and Michigan is, I think, fourth or fifth.
Right.
And there is a very large outlier there in that they gave up a kick return touchdown to Notre Dame, and so that'll just kill your rankings in that. But they're also extremely bad at returning punts. Their punter is averaging 50 yards a kick, but last year he averaged 41, so I think he might be due for some regression. So if there's just punts all day, I'd much rather be taking swings with A.J. Henning than the cornerback who hasn't done anything in 2 years that Wisconsin's running out there.
Yeah, and I mean, Henning is a kick return. I mean, remember, Wisconsin's a team of tryhards. Now, they have some, you know, they have plenty of talent out there, especially in starters, but especially in the secondary, and that carries over to their return units. They just have some guys that you can outrun. And Penn State really kind of, you can confirm this, but I think Penn State had an athletic advantage in that area, and you could really see it on the punt returns. And then Notre Dame, obviously, that punt return was not a, you know, oh, lucky punt return, right? That was, this guy is just outrunning everybody until he's to the kicker. So, I mean, this would be a good opportunity to pop one, just because how is Wisconsin so is built out of not necessarily the greatest of athletes.
Yeah, so just it just feels like a game in which there's going to be like one or two big plays like Michigan gets cracked on the ground, or they hit a big play, or they get an interception, and that's probably going to be the difference, is whoever is able to actually get like a big chunk of yards here and there, because otherwise I foresee punting.
Yeah, turnovers could be a story too.
Yeah, and Michigan, of course, hasn't turned the ball over yet, which is good. And Wisconsin is not in the same boat. but it's always very scary to like try to rely on that, of course, because those are high variance, low occurrence events. So, yeah, maybe Michigan gets a couple more turnovers than Wisconsin and wins by a couple of scores, but that's really hard to rely on.
Yeah, Brad Hawkins is so due, so due. There's another one time, every time I'm doing UFR, there's like one per game where like it just comes off his hands, or the he was in position to intercept and the quarterback overthrew it. Like he's, and that I think that is part of the defense that we just have not gotten to see yet, is that Michigan actually is built to create interceptions. That's part of playing zone defense, and part of playing the mix of zones that they're doing is they're supposed to be generating turnovers, and they've been there. Like quarterbacks have thrown to a guy that they should not throw to, or tried to, or and it's just haven't gotten the interception from it yet. But it, I mean, it's coming, and it's certainly not the team that Wisconsin would want to be playing either. Like they feel exactly about this game as we do.
Yeah. So going to be a tight game. Going to be charitably described as a slobber knocker, and. Feels like a real coin flip that will either break Michigan's road schneid against a good team, and or they're send us down the same old path. So, a little nervy. Yeah. You guys got predictions?
I gave mine 10-0 Wisconsin.
Right. That's extremely cheery.
I had just finished doing the UFRs, and I got no sleep, and I kind of had to stick to what do I'm going to add. You know, 7 points
no,
for that
just,
one? Come on.
No, whatever.
Yeah.
Alex?
14-13 Michigan.
I had 12-10, which is, it's hard to get weird scores. I guess I could have gone with 11. 11-10. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to find out what Seth learned from the UFR. Maybe don't have your children in the room for this one.
That's why my video is off today.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, to make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Back to MGO Radio 7.4, and now we delve into the aftermath of the Rutgers game, which went pretty much fine for a half, and then went very, very, very not fine for a second half. And
I was not fine. I was not fine.
I think the primary question on everybody's mind is what happened to the running game.
Right. I mean, the basic story is that Rutgers shut it down because, unlike all the other teams that we've played so far, they sent people against it. They were throwing their Sam into the box, and we weren't edging them, and they were throwing their safety down and stacking the box with nine guys or eight guys. And so, you know, we would get the cracks that we would normally get, and then there would be a safety in the hole, and Corum would hit him, and then that guy would kind of, or he would try to bounce inside again because that safety was taking away the outside. I thought there would be more bounces available than they actually did see in the end. It was a lot more kind of on the edge. I think I graded the running backs a little harsh, but I wanted them to take it anyway and try it. But like a lot of times there was just a cornerback sitting out there because the safety got to do what the cornerback normally does. So I didn't think that Michigan missed assignments that much. The running backs could have taken some gaps that they don't normally take, but they were pretty much doing the same thing that they normally do. And then the only difference was there was one more player or two more players a lot of times in the box. And for whatever reason, I know this has been, you know, the hot thing on the internet this week to talk about, but Michigan was not, and this is before Cade fell apart, but like Michigan was just not doing the things that you do to punish a team when they play with that many guys in the box.
Is it just like Rutgers arrogance, do you think?
That's the best explanation I've got. I mean, they've done this before. I mean, I remember 2017, I wrote a whole article about, like, Michigan was having power practice against them. And the idea was to get the running backs used to taking that back cut in the power game. And they did have a couple interesting things they did just inside, in, like, the very insides of their power game. I was pleasantly surprised. I thought that they were not as prepared. When I watched live, I was like, oh, no, they didn't even see how Rutgers plays. And They adjusted for what Rutgers does, and Rutgers had the adjustments for what they do. So Michigan, like, they saw some weird blocking, or they saw some weird attacks from Rutgers, people coming in from weird angles, guy blitzing, and they handled it pretty well. So I was pleasantly surprised with the job that Sherrone Moore did preparing for this kind of weird defense where guys are coming in from different angles. And then the only problem was they deal with it, and then there was just an extra guy there, and that guy was unblocked, and, you know, unblocked safety who's charging down can get anybody down because there's, you know, that's what they do.
Right. So, I mean, you got to think that Michigan has gone back to the tape and probably learned a lesson here.
I hoped so. I know that Sam talks to the coaches before he talks to us, and when he was talking about how, like, well, this is what we are, I was kind of frightened, I guess is the word. Like that.
Okay.
That's, I'm concerned that that's what Michigan is. They, you know, we're going to talk about McNamara in a minute, but, like, that's part of it, too, right? Like, they did have a drive where they went out and tried McNamara, and they just had him throw, and the throws were there. And he picked the right guy to throw to. And the only problem was he was throwing it way in the dirt. And, like, you were saying that Sainristol dropped one, but that one was on his shoe tops. Like, I graded that one a one. It was, like, possible to catch it, but it was not an accurate throw. And
I thought it was more...
Yeah, I mean, I was watching that one, too, because I was like, okay, did he have an accurate throw in there? Because part of our question with him, and I guess going right into McNamara now, is was he off or was this just kind of like randomness and small sample size, right? And I think it was pretty clear that he was off. And then the question is he off because he got hit? Is he off because he got hit and got hurt and they should have pulled him? Did they leave him in there for leadership, can't pull a starter issues? And, like, that gets into things that, A, we don't know anything about because the coaches aren't going to tell us about, like, the mental state of the quarterback. And, two, you can't see on tape. So, like, the only thing I can say is that the passes were pretty accurate and then the passes weren't accurate, but he's still picking the right guy to throw to. And if you're wondering why Cade McNamara is still starting after that kind of half and after them saying, well, I guess we have to turtle because we don't have a passer, I mean, he makes the right throws. And it's, like, the way to beat him is to try to, like, take away his first read, but it's very hard to do that because he reads the defenses so well. So, like, there is a quarterback there and his passes are normally accurate. So, I mean, there is a very good chance that we saw him get rattled, that he just kind of turned it off. It's the second time that's happened, so it's kind of nerve-wracking. But, like, maybe that's just, you know, maybe that goes away. Or maybe that happens in practice all the time, and that's why they only want to throw 11 times a game, because his first 11 throws are great. We don't know anything about this guy because we don't throw the ball.
Right. on the other side of the ball, it kind of felt like maybe... Rutgers kind of figured some things out, particularly with the QB run game. They ran a lot of inverted veer, and it was a variation of inverted veer that tended to hit a little bit further inside than sort of like classic inverted veer.
Yeah. I think that was more because Michigan's defense, that, like, we have, you know, we're running a 3-4 and we're used to seeing that against a 4-2-5. And, well, like, now we did have a 4-2-5 out there too, but you're right. They were doing a midline read on that sometimes. And sometimes they were just reading. So they actually were reading different guys sometimes and changing it up subtly. And they found that it was just best to read the defensive end because Michigan was rotating through those guys. Morris did not seem very practiced at that yet. No, that guy's got a lot on his plate. And I guess they just had not prepared him for, you know, inverted veers. And Sam made a great point yesterday, which was they didn't really have a chance to coach these guys up, right? There's no Josh Ross out there, so you're running two freshmen or a version of freshman linebackers out there. And you've got freshmen on the defensive line as well who haven't really seen this play in a live setting before. I don't remember seeing it in any of Rutgers' film before, so they kind of brought this out. And they're doing it out of a weird formation, and you can't coach them up because, like, every time they get on the sidelines, you know, you look around, your punt team's going back out there again. So,
right.
And that was visible to the point where when they got to the end of one of those super long drives in the third quarter where they were just running that play again and again and again, and then the third quarter ends, and then they get like a break for the quarter break, and then they come out, and they've got an answer. Morris attacks the running back instead, which is not what you're supposed to do in those in that situation, but he attacks the running back immediately, and two linebackers flow out immediately from behind, and they didn't get a stuff, but they stopped it at 3 yards instead of at 5 yards, which was made a big difference because at that point they were close to the goal line. So I think that they got some coaching in, but I think Sam made a good point. They just had young players out there who hadn't seen this, and Rutgers just got us stuck on the field.
All right. And then was there any explanation for the extremely frustrating lack of tight coverage against Noah Vedral?
I counted 9 times where they got 3 yards. 9 times. Well, 9 times they ran it. 1 time we actually reacted to it. So there's 2 things going on. One is we were running a lot of cover three, which leaves that open by design, which there's a way in cover three to cover for that, and that's just to have your cornerback come and play down. And, I mean, they call it mod coverage. You cover that guy for a little bit, and if he stems inside, then you change. But, like, basically, everyone else is running cover three, and that one cornerback is just in man for that period of time before the Coral Flat guy can get there, right? And that's what they kept on hitting it over Dax Hill, and you kept on seeing Green, like, backing up or Gray backing up. The other issue was when they were in cover two or cover one, those guys were still playing off for some reason. And I never saw Gray do this, but I saw Turner do it, and I saw Green do it a whole bunch. So it had to have been a coached thing. And people are saying, like, well, they've gotten burned by Ricky White. I'm like, you cannot play football expecting to get burned by Ricky White, because that's not, like, no one can play that way, right? Like, especially against Rutgers when, like, they're not, what are they going to do, hit you on back shoulder fades again? Like, Green got one, and he was playing in the parking lot all day, even when he was in man coverage. And, like, that's another thing where, like, I'm sure they looked at it and they said, okay, guys, we told you to play a little bit more off, but, like, in these situations, here's what you do. Because it's not a hard thing to coach, and they've all been coached on cover one before. So it's not, like, a hard thing to convert to something that makes a little bit more sense.
All right, so lessons moving forward?
Can we talk about Hinton? Because he came out with, like, a plus 17, minus zero grade, just out of nowhere.
That seems good.
I mean, it seems Rutgers-y, but no one else was getting those kinds of numbers. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I wish that I had an explanation other than Hinton broke out or Rutgers is bad and the rest of our defensive line is bad and Hinton is just okay and that worked for him. But, like, Smith was having trouble against their doubles and then the same guys would hit Hinton with the same angle and he would not only hold up, but swim through them. And he was a big part of those plays at the end. He wasn't playing a lot, so he was in there only half the time. So maybe saving him more, maybe that rotation kind of, you know, it hurts them because at some points you've got Spate out there and Spate did fine. I don't want to knock on Spate. Sometimes you got Jeter out there and he's getting a little pushed around. But and Welshoff too. Welshoff's just too small. But like the trade-off for that I thought was they had Hinton when they needed him. And Hinton was in there for a lot of high leverage situations and made big plays, keeping the linebackers clean against doubles or really breaking through. So like, I mean, it's possible Hinton is breaking out. He's had a couple good scores now. And, I mean, Wisconsin's really going to be the rubber meets road moment. But, like, that was surprising.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back. Hockey season starts this weekend, technically. They had an exhibition game against Bowling Green. And we thought we'd talk about it because it projects to be a pretty fun season.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication. It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGo Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Black smoke horizon, and it surely is a train. Surely is a train, Lord, surely is a train. Black smoke horizon, and it surely is a train. And I'm on my long journey home.
Welcome back to MGo Radio 7.4. We now welcome in Dave Nasternak, our hockey correspondent, to discuss what should be pretty fun hockey season. Almost unprecedented feat of having the number one pick in the draft return. The entirely unprecedented feat of having four of the top five picks in the NHL draft. And all those guys returned to campus in addition to, I think, three more first round picks.
Wait, so, I missed the Rutgers segment?
We did.
Oh.
We thought you'd
Can we go back over it?
I mean, if you just hit rewind on your TV, apparently you'll find it, so...
Oh, good. God. I'm glad this is recorded. I wasn't sure.
I don't get to see my image. Wait, I'm looking in your... this is great audio for everybody, but I didn't get to see my image on my screen, so now I get to see what I look like to you guys right now. This looks.
There great. You go. Brian's not amused by my joking.
Oh.
He wants to talk about hockey.
I do want to talk about hockey. Don't you want to talk about hockey?
I do want to talk about hockey.
All right, well, let's talk
this
about
this is pretty
hockey.
Crazy. I mean, like, you look at last year, and they have some dudes that look like they're going to be good, and then no dudes leave. And then, well, one kind of leaves. And then we get more dudes. I mean, when was the last time that happened?
Never.
Like, I mean, the Hensick years?
They lose Cam York, but everybody knew Cam York was out the door after year two. And all the guys who had to make decisions made the decision to return, in part because they feel like they didn't really get the whole Yost experience, which they did not.
Except for
Josh
Mann.
Straussman.
Oh, well, yeah, Strauss. Straussman was
he's kind of
a dude. One departure.
He's definitely a dude.
Yeah. Michigan is going to roll with Portillo, who was a third-round pick. He's giant. He's probably not going to be quite as good as Straussman. Hopefully it's not going to matter.
He'll be
fine. The thing last year that really stood out is that they were super inconsistent. So they'd show up one night and they'd run them off the ice 8-2, and then they'd lose 3-2 the next night. And, you know, in my opinion, the games didn't look a whole lot different. It was just they were dominant one night and snake bit the next night. And so they end up 15-10. They sneak into the tournament, and then they get COVID expelled. And then a lot of people are talking about how this team needs to, like, step up and be more consistent. And to me, it's just like if you reran that season 1,000 times, 15-10 was going to be their worst record. And
well, some of that was very early in the year.
Yeah.
And we've seen that from Michigan hockey for, I believe, Mel's entire tenure. So, and I mean, if you remember, North Dakota used to have those kinds of years where they would like have 500 first half of the seasons. Everyone's like, oh yeah, we're not going to worry about them. And then they win 11 games in a row and you're like, oh, I guess they're a one seed again. So the November early season stuff is not as big a deal. And I think that once you got to like, I would say February, late January, February, Michigan got pretty consistent and started playing really well. They did lose to like a Minnesota or a Wisconsin, but those teams were also like top five.
Right, and Michigan was extremely young last year and even younger in terms of their talent. So I think they were something like the second or third youngest team in the country. But
yes,
their three most talented players were so young that they were playing their draft years in college. And usually when those guys come back, year two is a massive bust-out year, because when you're younger, you get better quicker, and now they'll be adapted to college play. And I'm particularly looking at Kent Johnson here as a guy who, even though he was a point-per-game scorer last year, should be just a completely different player and a Hobie candidate just because he's got all the skill in the world. And, like, you know, I think Beniers is actually an exception to this. I think Beniers is probably going to be better, but not radically better, because he's already a 200-foot player. He already is the kind of size you want for the NHL. He's just not as – he's closer to his ceiling than
he's
I think
he's got an old man game is what he's got.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Alex can attest to this a little bit more, but like the thought for me with Michigan's forwards is, you know, usually you talk about lines, which are three dudes on a line. I think it's a little more about pairs for Michigan. I think you have the KJ Beniers pairing, you have the Brisson Bortolo pairing, and then you have the Van Wymoyle pairing, and then they're going to find guys that fit, because all three of those pairs, like, sort of fit together in the offense, and now it's sort of about bringing in, like, Cicchellini fit in nicely on that Brisson Bortolo line at the end of the year. Alex, maybe you want to talk a little bit about Duke and Samuskevich. It seems like when we were talking about it, you had Duke up with KJ and Beniers.
Yeah, I like Duke in that capacity as somebody who can play a little bit closer to the net, plays in tight, and I think you could play on both lines, honestly, but Duke's ability to shoot, I like as a pair with those players, because they do need a little bit more shooting, whereas Bortolo has Brisson, who already shoots a lot. I mean, to me, the biggest question they've got to answer is, what are they doing with Johnny Beecher? Like, that's the biggest question when you're assembling this lineup. Is he staying at center, or is he moving to wing?
Yeah.
I would assume that he's staying at center. Mel has believed in him a lot longer than I've believed in him. but that's a big question, because if you're going to move Beecher into the top six, then you have questions what you're going to do with your third-line center. If you leave
right.
Beecher on the third-line center, then you go about it a little bit differently. You know, my big thing I would like to see is Mackie Samoskevich paired with Beecher on the third line. I think that Samoskevich has the offensive spark that Beecher lacks, and I think that could push that line forward. And the reduced capacities, I think, will help too. That they spent, when we were just talking about the inconsistency, they spent way too long last year jamming a square peg into a round hole in trying
yeah.
to make Johnny Beecher the first line center. And it was painfully obvious for a while that he was not their first line center, and that he was not the center of their top power play unit. And so now you enter the season kind of knowing that, and you can go about it a little bit more efficiently, I think.
Well, that's the interesting thing is, like, you can have Beecher, Samoskevich, however you say him. Samo is probably what I'm going to be tweeting because I'm not going to be typing out like 100 different letters. So Beecher, Samo, and then probably somebody like Pasta maybe. Mike Pasta is back for like a seventh year now. Like he might fit in on that line, and he's fit in a number of different ways for Michigan in terms of just passing. He's been on skating lines. I mean, it just seems like they have a ton of options, and you're right. They need to figure out what they want to do with that third line, but if they do – I think all the pieces kind of fall into place. And I mean, I was counting this up, and Brian, you mentioned like the draft status. I think they have 7 first round picks.
They do. Cause they
like, that's insane.
They have the 4 guys who went in the top 5, and then they have Samuskevich, they have Rasan, and then they have Beecher.
Right.
And then Bortolo went in the early second round. Like, you know, the amount of talent on this team.
We should clarify that Eric Portillo was the 5th goalie off the board. Going as high as he did in the draft is akin to a first-round talent at a different position. Goalies just don't really go in the first round overall.
Unless you're Rick DiPietro?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the one thing that you have some caution with there is that like he's 6'6", so clearly being drafted on potential more than like he's really good right now. But
he looked pretty good, and I mean, he split time in the second half of the year, and I mean, there might have been a couple goals on him, but nothing that was like, oh, we can't have him out there. Like, he'd like the game,
not what I'm saying, but, you know.
I mean, if he was not awesome, I don't think they would have let Straussman walk out the door.
I agree.
Did they let him? Is that what? I mean, what happened there is a little bit odd, because he's, you know, he signed with a Swedish team, didn't he?
I think he was he's not going to play very much because Michigan's got basically a first-round goalie that he's going to have to share time with.
There were always questions about the man situation when they brought Portillo in last year because you knew Buffalo, no way in the world they would have let Portillo show up at Michigan if he wasn't going to play very soon into his college career when there are 50 other programs he could have played at. So you had to know that Mel assured Buffalo that Portillo was going to be the starter within a year. I don't know if he knew that Strauss was in a Cam York situation, perhaps, where he just sort of said, this is it for me. I don't know what happened, but you can read between the lines.
It was hard to see Portillo splitting yet another year.
Yeah,
sure.
And I mean, you know, they bring in, what is it, West? Is it Noah West?
Noah West.
I mean, he's going to play, what, like 5 games? I mean, maybe
probably,
more, you never know.
Probably
but like,
no games.
Well, I mean, they're going to get him some because you never know what happens, and he'll get, like, don't they play, like, Niagara at some
point? Yeah, he'll get in
at
some point.
He's going to get some game, a couple of those games, but Big Ten, like, big-time games, probably not too many. We haven't even gotten to the defense yet, but, like, I mean, we talked about pairings on the offense or in the forwards. I mean, it's kind of obviously it's the same thing on the defense. Power Blankenberg has to be the number one, right, Alex? I mean, that's just – it's got to be in stone at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that pairing should be, you know, like a top pairing on an NHL team in the playoffs where they play the power play, they play the penalty kill, and if you're in a high-leverage game, you know, you're going up against Minnesota for the Big Ten title or you're in the tournament, that pair should be playing 31, 32 minutes. Like, they should be munching all of the minutes available because they can play in any situation and you know, they can do everything, right? I mean, they can play in the offensive zone. They can play in the defensive zone. They can skate with the puck in transition. They can pass. Like, they should shoulder a ton of weight.
And then I think, you know, we've discussed privately a few different things about what you're going to do on pairing 2 and 3. But to me, and you said this, and it made a ton of sense, the only matchup that probably doesn't work is putting Hughes with Edwards. Because they're both kind of the same guy, kind of the puck carrier, the Cale Makar guy going forward that is going to need somebody who's like defensively sound behind him and putting
Mel isn't going to pair 2 freshmen together. So
probably not.
But point is understood that like okay, those 2 guys of all the defenders.
Right. One will be on 2, play. 1 on 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Then, you know, you said originally Truscott maybe at 2 and maybe it's going to be Pearson. I mean, it's at that point, they're kind of, it's coin flips. And then they even have a 7th and an 8th. I mean, you know, we didn't even get to Jack Summers, who's been fine. He's had his issues at times. And then Jake Heronen, who's a walk-on, has actually played admirably well for, what was it? It was about 3 or 4 weekends in January. And, I mean, he scored a goal, and you didn't even notice him. And it's sort of like a safety, right? Like, if you can go through an entire football game and not really notice the safety, generally he's not doing anything too terrible.
Yeah. And, I mean, the last thing I'll just say is that I would bet on Keaton Pearson with Luke Hughes. The more I think about it, Mel is a big fan of Keaton Pearson. He's been a regular in the lineup for 2 years now. He played high leverage minutes next to Cam York last season. I have some issues with the way Keaton Pearson plays at times, but, you know, Mel believes in him a lot, very clearly. So I would wager that to be
Sounds
the case.
Sounds like nepotism to me.
Yeah.
We have some people here listening to this podcast who don't know that these people are not related. So I'm going to state for the record, football fans, that the two Pearsons are not related.
But Hughes spelled very differently.
But Hughes is a Hughes, right?
Yes. And he's also going to be number 43. So if you didn't get enough of Hughes at 43, you will have at least one more year of Hughes at 43.
How similar are the brothers? Like, there's a big height difference, right? I'm not going to, like, look out there and think that, like,
So the Hughes family all has this just transcendent skating gene. The mother had it, the father had it, and all of the kids have it. And so Luke is like Jack, and he's like Quinn. He can skate really, really well. Stylistically, he plays a lot like Quinn. There's questions about his ability to be as creative as Quinn as a playmaker, that he might not see some of the passing lanes that Quinn could. Some concerns about the shot, just the way Quinn had. But he's bigger, and especially for the hockey men of the world, that's a big deal when you're talking about a defenseman. To go from 5'9 to 6'2. However, Luke is a wiry 6'2, so he might get pushed around a little bit as a freshman. But I do like his ability to bang around in the corners. But when you read his scouting reports, you see some of the same concerns about that Quinn had, right? He's going to see chances the opposite way. He's going to be questionable back-checking at times, so you're going to need someone there to be a steadying presence. Also, shout-out to Quinn. He just got paid 6 years, $8 million per season by Vancouver. So,
wow.
Yeah, just announced a couple hours ago. So the Hughes family is in good shape right now.
But the thing that we can kind of take away from this, I think, is that when in Quinn's sophomore year, he was basically the only way Michigan could enter the zone and in sometimes exit the zone. That will not be the case this year. They definitely have other options. He may be tasked with it at times to do it on his own line or when he has the puck, you know, whatever. But it's not going to be a Quinn situation where it's like, all right, well, see what you can do and we'll meet you at the other end of the ice. Like, they also have a top end pairing that might be as good as anyone in college hockey, and their third pairing isn't going to be too terrible either. So it's not, he won't have to be as free flowing all the time.
I will say one thing I do wish was still a thing. I wish Luke Martin was still around because he would just be the perfect guy to pair with Luke Hughes.
Joe Ciccone?
as the veteran, steady, stay-at-home guy, and they don't quite have that, but, you know, Keaton Pearson could be it. So,
all right. Well, we are looking at a season that should be pretty fun, and hopefully we'll...
A season that's going to be kind of front-loaded, unfortunately. If you look down the schedule, I think all of the big names come to Michigan before the end, mid-December. I think Notre Dame, Minnesota, and Wisconsin all come to Ann Arbor. So
is State any better this year? Or are they still like the? Are they going to be the bottom of the Big Ten this year?
Who?
State, Michigan State. Like they were. I mean, it's a little weird having them kind of at the bottom of our conference.
Been like that for years, man.
Yeah, it's going to be them.
Well, we were
Ohio
down
State,
there with them
guess.
Too for a while, but like, I mean, I've been through a lot of CCHA years. It's a little, I don't know, it just feels odd.
The CCHA is back, Seth.
It is back. Yeah, the WCHA
is.
Yeah, the WCHA is dead, and it has been replaced by the new CCHA. I will say one thing about the schedule: it's loaded in the non-con. UMass comes to Yost. They're going to be a top or whatever. I don't know the preseason rankings, but they were right up there. I think they might have been preseason number one or two, somewhere around there. And then they play the icebreaker tournament where they're going to see Duluth and either Providence or Minnesota State. and that's only in a couple weeks from now. So
yeah,
on the road. So it is a really competitive schedule. We're going to get a feel of this team. And for the people who do not make the bad financial decision of subscribing to BTN Plus, you'll still get to see a lot of games. There's a lot of games on BTN regular, several on ESPNU, and then some on, the various sports stations, Bally Sports Detroit, as it's now called, and I think two on Peacock as well. So you don't need to subscribe to BTN Plus to see this team, which is
good.
What
about TSN?
I don't know. I'll
pick anything up.
I'll have to look that one up.
We just gotta get
BTN Plus still works here. So.
Oh, okay.
CBC works.
So you're stuck with that,
Brian, I want a baseline now. What kind of hockey win is okay for Muppets this year? like can we do it for UMass if they beat them? Like,
well, that'll be in a while. We got to come up with some more reason. If they beat Duluth, I'm sorry. If they're beating Duluth, I'm calling veto on it all. It's going up. So be ready, Seth, at about 10 or 11 o'clock on Friday, October 15th, because if that happens, I might post Muppets in front of my house.
We'll get on here and do a version where we actually sing it.
Got your answer there.
can I shout out a sponsor before we hit the outro here? Because Signal Wire, we're supposed to do a read for them anyway. They're a real-time video technology that allows you to create interactive video experiences. Cities that don't have Ann Arbor politics use them for very nice virtual town halls. Musicians have been using them for fully interactive virtual concerts. And they fixed our issue in the middle of this entire podcast, which was like... So if you're using some other system and, they don't get to you right away and they can't fix it right away, that's because the developers who created that system probably are the guys who created this system because they left there to do this. And they're all MGo Blog fans, and when they saw that the podcast was having trouble, the devs are all in the help comments right there just fixing this for us. So SignalWire, you can try out SignalWire.com, use the code Muppets for $25 in developer credit, tell them we sent you, and they will thank you, and so will the people you work with.
Last thing, Alex is doing a really good job of writing previews. This is as extensive, I think, a hockey preview as we've maybe ever had that I can remember. And he's got, a couple of them came out this week, and you have a couple more next week. Is that true?
Yep.
And we'll have a hockey cast probably maybe Monday or Tuesday. We'll work out a time and get it recorded that'll be a little more in-depth on this stuff. We just more of the tip of the iceberg tonight. But check in next week, and we'll have even more hockey stuff.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. I feel like we got a preview of the hockey cast myself because it was very nice to have a segment where I didn't have to talk.
Boris is a mayor and a land surveyor with plans of his own. He hates Aruska, he hates a vodka, banned it from his home. He hates Aruska,
Ruska,
vodka,
vodka,
he never drank a single drop. He hates Aruska,
Ruska,
vodka,
vodka,
this poison he swears to stop. He's singing la da 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 da. One day Boris was visited by demons in his head. And they said, bring me Ruski vodka or your son may soon be dead.